everybody, it's Joe Parrott, founder of the Ladies Working Dog Group. Are you feeling stuck with your gun dog training? Trust me, you're not alone, and that's exactly why you need to be here. Every week, we're bringing you the best tips and hacks to make training your gun dog easy peasy. We'll keep it straightforward, no fuss, just actionable guidance that you can put straight to use. So let's get started. Hello and welcome to another episode of Found It, Fetched It. This week, we're going to be talking all about lure training. Is it a tool or is it a trap? Joining me for this week's episode is LWDG Group expert Samantha Thornycroft-Taylor. How are we today, Samantha?
I'm really good, thank you, Joe. How are you?
I'm quite interested in this because I've seen loads of you doing like lure stuff and you talk about it and I get it and I've used it. But I think some of the stuff we're going to touch on is some of the issues that I've had with it. So I'm really interested to find out what you think about certain parts. So let's start with the beginning. Can you explain like the basic principles behind luring and why it's so popular?
Okay, so luring is most commonly used with little puppies when you're trying to introduce the rules, the boundaries and bits of training before they're even allowed to go outside. So it starts to bring in this idea of being with me is fun. We do something, it keeps you occupied. And in theory, should then mean that the puppy is more likely to rest, less likely to get into two bad habits, that sort of thing. And we can use it for a huge number of things. We can use it to help us with a recall and we can lure them back to us with a piece of food. We can lure them into heel positions and start teaching them the very baby basics of what we're going to go on to need later on in life. So there are a multitude of fabulous reasons to use the lure, why you'd use the lure and to be beneficial, but they do also have their downsides.
So can you give me an example of when somebody would use a lure?
So initially, like I say, I use lures for puppy for training the heel position. So before I really introduced the lead, I might be in my kitchen, in my living room, I might be in the garden, but I'm using a piece of food in my hand and I'm just trying to guide the puppy into the correct position. And then once the puppy has got used to the idea of following this piece of food around into this position, then gets me the piece of food, then I can start to introduce a heel command. And you can go on to use that lure to start putting movement into your heel. And you've got the puppy's focus on you and the lure. So you're creating a good behavior from the get-go, which you can then build upon as the puppy gets older.
So at what point does a lure sort of transition from being a helpful training tool to being what some might see it as being like a potential bribe?
Absolutely. So if, in my opinion, the lure isn't dropped quick enough, if you haven't faded it out and gone from lure in hand to just hand to then not needing the hand, you've just got the verbal command, then you will often find some very clever puppies look at you and they go, oh, you haven't got a piece of food in your hand, so I'm not going to do it. I'm going to stare at you with this blank face. I'm going to pretend like I haven't got a clue what you'll want from me, because then quite often what happens is the owner will go, okay, maybe you haven't fully understood the concept, so I'll get the lure back out and I will start trying to go over it again. And the puppy goes, oh, brilliant, you've got food in your hand, I'll do it for you this time. But that, to me, sometimes, don't get me wrong, puppies genuinely haven't learned yet and we've almost faded it too quickly. But most dogs will reach a point where they'll go, I'll do it if you've got food, but I won't do it if you haven't got food. And at that point, you're in that crossover of bribe. It's the same like with a dog. If you're out in the field and you're recalling them and they look at you and they go, have you got a piece of food in your hand? No, you haven't. I'm not coming. And instead of giving the dog like a verbal correction or a reminder and encouraging them in other ways and then rewarding them potentially for coming back, depending on how quickly they were and what they did during that phase of correction, a lot of owners will go, oh, hang on, Fido, and they'll reach into their pocket and they'll go, here, I've got the food. And then the dog looks up and goes, oh, brilliant, you've got the food out now. Yeah, I'll come back for that. So they're not actually coming back because they've been told to come back or because they've had this nurtured idea that being with their owner is fun. They're coming back because you've bribed them to come back.
And for a first-time owner, that point of where it changes from being a lure to a bribe, must be really hard to identify. How could people reduce their dependency on a lure?
I think the important thing is to fade out that lure as quick as you can. And it might be a sort of semi-gradual process in that you can fade it for a bit and then bring it back in and then fade it for a bit and then fade it completely so that the puppy is or the dog is essentially always trying because they're always in the hope that this food reward is now coming. But that's the big difference. It now needs to be a reward for completing the behavior rather than a lure to get it or a bribe to get it to do the behavior. And it's just for a lot of owners, they'll say, oh, he'll do this, he'll do this, he'll do this. And then you say, okay, do it without the food. Oh, no, that never happens. And at that point, that's one of the big light bulb moments I see with a lot of people where they go, oh, it's not a lure anymore. It's now definitely a bribe.
So is this a case of timing?
A lot of it is yes. And it's the difficulty with it is, as we often say, every dog is different and you have to work with the dog in front of you. So there is no real sort of do this 10 times and then you can start to fade it. It's all about the dog and how quickly the dog picks things up. But it is important that as soon as you can fade and then drop that lure, you do. And is I went through it myself many years ago. So my first several dogs I didn't train with food rewards. I trained them purely with verbal praise, touch praise, and like retrieving as a reward, that sort of thing. And then the world exploded with using food rewards. And it was one of those I thought, I have to do it. I have to know that I know how to do it in order to be a part of this ever-evolving training world, but also to be able to help other people do it. And the first dog I used food rewards for, she was probably two, I think, when I got her. And she came with a few issues. But I realized very quickly that it wasn't as simple as using food and then not using food. There was this luring and then fading process that had to be gone through. So she taught me a big lesson. And I think it's people get to that point where they go, actually, the food is no longer working because it's become so much of a bribe and so not a lure anymore that. In essence, they almost have to go back and try and train the behavior from the beginning, pretty much without the lure, use a different way to train that behavior because the chain has been broken. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, and I think this is the thing that makes me a little nervous with it because, very much like you started out, Dad taught me if I pulled a piece of food out of my pocket, I would be made to eat it, not the dog. He was like, that doesn't happen. As time goes on, I've learned that's because he trialed and there were certain things you can't do in a trial. So why introduce them from the beginning because they're not going to be there at the end? That was his way of thinking, I'm sure, if I could ask him now. But I suppose I don't want to be that person, and I'm sure others don't, where, I don't know, you've pulled out a chicken nugget, for example. I know we're not pulling out chicken nuggets, but and the dog goes, that's not a big enough bribe now. Could you pull a steak out of the other pocket for me? I didn't want to have a dog that only did things for me because I had something he valued, not as a reward, but as a reason to even do in the first place.
Exactly that, yeah. And I think there is that big risk between, like you've just said, the chicken nugget, but it doesn't actually trump the deer that's just legged it across the field. In that occasion, pretty much the only thing that is going to trump a young, enthusiastic dog, let's say a driven one, is going to be like a ready butchered haunch of venison. It likes the thrill of the chase in that situation. If you're sat there going, well, I got a piece of kibble in my hand, the dog's going to be like, and there's this nice fun thing over here. So obviously, we've got to teach them the rules and boundaries and teach them that chasing deer is not an option. When I'm luring with young puppies, I do only ever use kibble. I never go down the route of using chicken or sausages or something that smells nice. It is, for me, it's a really short process. It's something I can do that's fun for the puppy before the puppy can go out and about and on a walk. And then when they are allowed outside, I'll probably use it minimally just so that I can help the dog with the generalizing concept. Just because you do this in the house, you can now do the same thing out the house. But then it's dropped. So I like you said, if you're going to use a lure, I would try and keep it probably as basic as possible and try not to fall into the trap of having to take kibble with you for these situations and then cheese with you if there's another dog around and then that steak with you if there is deer or pheasant or something else.
So it's understanding when we're using it as a lure and when we're using it as a reward and what the purpose of using the food is.
Exactly that, yes. The lure needs to then become the reward. And if it doesn't quite quickly become that reward, it often ends up being a bribe. I'm not going to say all the time, but I'd say probably at least 90, 95% of the time, the dogs that I've worked with, when there's a problem, that it's because the lure has become a bribe. And that you need the dog to value being with you and to value doing stuff with you more than it values whatever the environmental distractions are. So we can, in the early days, use a lure to help emphasize our presence and emphasize our fun, but we've got to make sure that the dog still finds value in that, and then the dog finds value in being with us when we've dropped that more than they value the outside world.
How do you think your philosophy towards lures has changed since you introduced it?
I think now I, so with the dog that I started introducing using food to, I ended up after a little while, I thought, you know what, actually, this just isn't working. And I've evolved, I've got better at my timing at using that as the years have gone by. With her, I did ultimately go back to basics. Now, whether that was because she had some behavioral issues, so I was trying to introduce a new concept that I didn't know and introduce a new way of living for her at the same time. Maybe that's what made that one such a catastrophic failure. But we ended up using like retrieving and stuff as her reward, and she came on phenomenally. So from then on, when I was working with puppies or new to owner rescue dogs or rehomes, I would potentially introduce a lure just to get the dog going, okay, I can come with you. I can follow this piece of food around in a circle to get into heel. And once I've got that sort of muscle memory, this is what you want, then the lure is gone. And then you use your hand as your guide. And once then you use your hand as the guide with the verbal command in place as well. And then you can almost drop your hand signal as well and just have the verbal command. And then once the dog has gone, okay, you want me in heel? I've come to heel, then the hand might go in the pocket to get the food out. So it's very clearly a reward. The food isn't brought out until the behavior has been completed. So for me, it's a very short process, this luring thing. It's basically just to get the thought processes going in the dog's mind and the dog going, oh, that's what you want. And as soon as the dog is showing me that it knows what it requires, the lure is faded out as quick as I can.
I tried to remember back years and much has happened, including my brain getting very foggy. But I tried to remember like when I used to train pups with dad to heel. And literally, it was the most boring process in the world, but it was very different. You would literally walk a few steps, and if he stepped in front of you, we would stop and the dog would sit. And then we'd go, and if we walked in front of him, he would stop and the dog would sit. And it was like, so boring. The dog learned, oh my God, if I just step in front, we stop. I don't know whether that was like dad's way of training it or if that was like the traditional way of training it. There was no aggression, there was no anger. It was just boring as. But people are like, okay, I don't want to use a lure. There are ways of training heel work, even if it's not my dad's way. There are ways of training it where you don't need a lure, aren't there?
Absolutely. And I think this is where it comes down to the fact that all training is intertwined and interconnected. So I think probably my way of training my own puppies would potentially have been quite similar to your dad's. It wasn't necessarily that I set out to teach this dog to walk to heel. What I taught the dog was fun is with me. Be connected with me, have that real strong bond and desire to be with me. And the heel work fell into place. And it's, I don't know, I, for my own dogs as puppies, and again, similar to you, I'm very lucky in that I haven't necessarily got to walk my 12-week-old puppy down a road to get to a field. So we walk out the door and we've got safe land. So a lot of my earlier dogs probably weren't even really introduced to a lead until they were 6, 7, maybe even 8, 9 months old. And by that point, they thoroughly nurtured, stay around my feet. This is where the fun is. So the heel work came from there. If you do have to teach your young dog, obviously, to walk on a lead, and many owners do because they do have to go out their front door, down a road, and into a field, then you can use the same concept. Teach the dog that it's fun to be around you. So teach them that playing games with you is where they want to be. Everyone has their preferred method of teaching heel. And I'd say there isn't really a right and a wrong way. Again, it all comes down to what works for you and the dog.
I agree with you. I also think, looking back, a lot of his pups learned heel from the older dogs. He would say heel, they would form a line, literally like airplane wings. And the others just learned, like for a long time, they wouldn't be in heel and he wouldn't really bother them. And then suddenly they clicked, I think. There was method and his madness worked for him and for his dogs. And he was very good at, well, like what we discussed there. He kept dogs that I think he knew he could build that bond with. Whereas he was very quick to not keep dogs if he thought they weren't going to get that connection. And that's what you're saying, isn't it? It's like the dog in front of you, you've got to find a way to train the dog in front of you.
Absolutely. And I was slightly different from your dad in that respect because obviously he bred litters. We don't. So puppies that were brought in, they were picked from a litter. So it was still that work in progress that if I couldn't create a bond with a dog, then I would potentially have had to have thought about going, do you know what? Me and you aren't gelling, but I'm not that sort of person and I don't give up easily, but equally, I create quite an emotional attachment myself. Every dog that I've had has come to stay. But your dad's way of thinking, there is a lot of merit to it. If it's just you don't have to like everyone that you meet at the party you've got to go to. It's similar if you've got a group, a litter of puppies around you, you're not going to necessarily gel with every single one of them. So, yeah, your dad's way of doing things, I think, was quite, it might sound cut and dry to a lot of people. But I can see the sense in it. If he didn't think they were going to gel, then they were better off, better placed with someone else that they would gel with.
Oh yeah, he used to like going slightly off the topic of lures, but because he bred them specifically to trial, he would have a litter and he could have loads of people waiting. And he'd say, "No, I'm keeping these 3 a minute." And they were like, "But we're on your waiting list." And he's, "No, they're not going yet." And then we might be months down the road, and he'd go, "Okay, me and that one are not really getting to where I want to go to. That one could go." And it was really interesting, actually. But like you said, it's very easy when you have a huge block of kennels, a farm, and all day, not all day to play with them, but all a lot of time to spend with them. Most of us, like even for me now, that world doesn't exist. The struggles and the successes I have with my dogs don't change how I feel about my dogs. I'm very much emotionally tied to them. But I think part of that as well is to go back to Lewis. If you've got that understanding of what it is you're trying to train, and the role that lure plays in accelerating that learning process, because that's what it is giving you, isn't it? Once you've used that food to click into their psychology, click into their learning capability, you can help a dog to understand something far quicker, maybe, than without it.
Yeah, and you can, like you say, tap into their psychology, get their neuron pathways building so much quicker and use the lure to your advantage. And you can use a lure to a certain extent to help start building that bond with the puppy that then goes on to become that friendship and that trust and that confidence in each other. But you now no longer need the piece of food to reward it for coming to you in the first place. See, late week old puppy, when it goes to its new home, is going to be a little bit, what's just happened? My world's just turned upside down. So we've got to teach that puppy that we are to be trusted and using a lure, using some food, then going on to use a reward can be a huge way of just promoting that growth in our confidence, our relationship. But it is, yes, it's unique to every dog, but it is, I think, the problem with the lure is that it's often not dropped quick enough. So it's using it to just promote that seedling and then get rid of the lure and nurture the growth in every other way.
Because if you look at relationships with children, when does giving a child, for example, a bar of chocolate be a reward? When is it a bribe? For a lot of us, we don't actually think about the psychology of what we're trying to do. And that ends up with us having situations where we're in a sticky corner a little bit. For example, you say to a child, oh, here's your bag of sweets, come over here, we leave in the park. But at some point they can go, no, I don't want it. Or if you don't have the sweets, why should I come over to you?
Yeah, and at some point they'll probably go, well, do you know what? I've made three new friends. I'm having so much fun here. I don't really want the sweets right now. Whereas you could, you give them a reward for tidying their bedroom without arguing about it. It's most definitely a bribe on nearly every supermarket trip with your screaming toddler when you go, okay, we're going to pick a chocolate bar. You're going to sit in the trolley and eat it so I can do the shopping. That is a bribe. There are so many similarities between children growing up and training our dogs. It's unreal. And I must hear it 10, 20 times a week. People say to me, oh, just like children then. And it is. The difference is we expect our puppies, our dogs to learn things so much quicker. And yes, they mature quicker than children do and they are their own species. But it's just having that balance of that understanding. We can lead you into a situation that benefits us both by use of the lure. And then we can lead you into that situation because we've practiced it with the lure and we can reward you after you've done it, rather than we lead you into that situation and then you go and do your own thing and we go, please, I brought some nice smelly cheese today. Please, will you come back to me? If you're asking the dog to do something and you don't have confidence that it's going to do it, then the dog actually either hasn't understood the concept of what you're asking or it's choosing to ignore what you're asking. And then you're in the bribe category.
I think what you just said is probably the point. We should identify ourselves in our own mind. If we are putting them in our bag in hope that it will be the reason our dog will come back to us, we are in bribe territory.
Yes. Yeah. You're at least encroaching into bribe territory. If you go out to a woodland for a nice walk with your dog and you've taken a toy with you and then you shoved a few treats in your pocket, I might need those if I come across a horse and rider. But you wouldn't need them if you didn't come across the horse and rider. But you're in that entrance to bribe territory where actually you need to look and go, instead of hoping I don't need them, but I've got them as backup or a bribe, you need to reevaluate the situation and go, well, what I've got to do is teach my dog to leave that horse and rider and still to return to me when I recall it anyway.
So it's really to ask yourself the question, what is the purpose of me taking this with me? And that's for everything we take out with us.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And it's, we've got to look at as well what the dog finds rewarding. That actually is really interconnected with this whole lure thing. And you don't have to lure with food. You can lure with a toy. You can lure with your body. You can lure with a tea towel if that's what motivates the dog. So when we're talking about lures, it's not specifically food, though I would say they're probably the most commonly used in the beginning. But it's just identifying what you're using them for, why you're using them, and what their true purpose is now. So when you first started, their true purpose was a lure. But if you're going down the further down the road and you're going, actually, is this still a lure or is it a bribe? I think if you're asking yourself that question, you've probably entered bribe territory already.
If you think about it, dogs are so fast to learn. You need to be aware of that right from the start.
Yes. Yeah. They pick things up really quickly and they need the muscle memory. They need the repetition, the reinforcement, the proofing, the generalization. There are loads of stages to go through, but, and there are parameters as well. Obviously, you've got the 3Ds play a huge amount on how quickly a dog is going to pick something up, but they do learn quickly. And if we are consistent with our delivery of said behavior, with our reward of said behavior, and make sure that the reward is what motivates the dog to try, It's all well and good shoving a piece of cheese under a spaniel's nose, but actually, if it finds hunting more rewarding, at some point it's going to say to you, you can stuff your cheese. I can smell rabbits over here. And then you're chasing your dog around with a bit of cheese, going, but look at Fido, I've got cheese, I've got cheese. And he's going, yeah, I don't care about your cheese. I can smell rabbits. What are you going to do then? Take a rabbit with you? So it's find what motivates your dog, drop the lure as quickly as you can, and then progress the training. But like you said, they do pick things up really quickly. We've just got to make sure that we're not giving them mixed messages or inconsistencies along the way.
Me and you have talked about this before, and this is a true story. I read on a Facebook group of a lady who was cooking an entire chicken every day to keep her dog with her while she was out. And now we laugh about it, but that's an extreme version of this, isn't it? It's like going out knowing the only control you have is the bribery in your pocket.
Yeah, so the dog isn't sticking with her because it wants to stick with her because they've got this fabulous friendship that's been nurtured. It's sticking with her because she's a chicken dispenser. And actually, for that dog, it probably wouldn't overly matter who was the chicken dispenser, just as long as they had chicken.
Craziness. I think this has been another fabulous podcast. I hope everybody listening has enjoyed. We work really hard to keep these podcasts informative and fun. If you have any topic you would like us to cover, please let us know. We have been doing this for nearly 3 years, I think, and we want to make sure we are producing episodes that you absolutely love. So send us an email. It's joanne@ladiesworkingdoggroup.com, and send us your ideas and we will look at them and possibly cover them. Sam, thank you for another fantastic episode. We really do appreciate it. For people who are looking for you, Sam, obviously they can find you within the LWDG membership, but where else can they find you?
Yeah, so we are based in Gloucestershire. We run Languedoc Gundogs and Canine Foundation, both of which are on social media and have their own websites.
Fabulous. Listeners, I hope you've absolutely loved this. If you have any issues with heel work or any issues with any of the topics that we've covered, please join the membership. Inside, you'll find loads and loads of training on all these topics that are absolutely fabulous, plus the support you need to train your working dog. Thank you all for listening, and we hope to speak to you all next week. That's it for today's episode. A massive thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to head over to the LWDG and sign up for our membership. Get access to expert-led training, a wonderfully supportive community, and the resources you need to become a confident and skilled gun dog trainer. Let's take this journey together because no woman should have to train her gun dog alone. We'll see you all next week.